Welcome to our deep dive. This time we're tackling Jacques-Louis David's The Coronation of Napoleon. Our listener sent in this Wikipedia page, and wow, it is packed with detail.
It's an excellent choice. The painting itself is fascinating, but the story behind it, all the choices David made, that's where it gets really interesting.
It really is more than just a painting, isn't it? It's like this whole carefully constructed narrative about Napoleon's right to rule, you know?
Exactly. And that's what makes it so interesting to unpack. Every element, the composition, the figures, even the colors, they all feed into this narrative.
You know, when you see Napoleon front and center in those opulent robes, it's hard to miss the whole Roman emperor vibe he's got going on.
Right. That was a very deliberate choice to model himself visually after figures like Augustus or Caesar.
It makes you wonder what they were going for with that. Like, what message were they trying to send by making that connection so obvious?
I think it's about more than just associating Napoleon with power. It's about lineage, about historical weight.
Oh, interesting. So it's less about I am powerful and more like I am the next in line.
Exactly. It's saying I'm part of this legacy, but I'm also the start of something new, which is a pretty bold statement to make, especially considering.
Considering he wasn't exactly born into this whole emperor lineage, right? He clawed his way to the top.
Precisely. He wasn't supposed to inherit power. He seized it. And that makes the whole crown situation even more intriguing, don't you think?
Oh, you mean how he originally wasn't even crowning himself in the painting?
Yes. In the initial sketches, he's holding the crown above his head, which is a completely different gesture.
It's almost like he's asking permission, right? Or hesitant to fully claim the power for himself.
Exactly. But in the final version, he's placing the crown on his own head, firmly, decisively. It's a small change, but it completely transforms the message.
So it's not about divine right, not anymore. It's about him taking charge, making his own destiny, and this being post-French Revolution France. That's a powerful statement.
Absolutely. You got to remember the context here. France had just overthrown its monarchy. People were wary of anyone claiming absolute power.
So by crowning himself, Napoleon's sending the message that his authority comes from something else entirely. It's a bold move, especially considering the church is right there in the painting.
It's a calculated risk, for sure. But it's a time of immense upheaval. And Napoleon, he was a master at reading the room, at playing the political game.
And speaking of power dynamics, we can't ignore Josephine in all of this. I mean, she's literally kneeling as Napoleon crowns her. It's a powerful image, even if it was dictated by French law at the time.
It certainly highlights the complexities of Josephine's position, doesn't it? She's empress, but her power is still very much defined in relation to Napoleon.
And the fact that Napoleon crowns her himself, not the Pope, just reinforces that, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It all feeds into the narrative of who holds the power here. But then there's another fascinating female figure in this painting, Napoleon's mother, Letizia.
Right. It's not every day you see the emperor's mother just casually chilling in a coronation portrait, especially when you consider she actually boycotted the real thing.
It's a fascinating detail, isn't it? It speaks to the complexities of their relationship and how Napoleon wanted to be perceived.
Almost like he's trying to rewrite history a little, projecting this image of family unity when, in reality, things are much more complicated.
Exactly. And it reminds us that even in the most staged, most calculated images, there are these glimpses of reality peeking through.
Okay, so we've got Napoleon, Josephine, his mother. But this painting is packed with other figures, each with their own story to tell.
Oh, absolutely. It's like a who's who of early 19th century Europe. And each figure adds another layer of meaning to this already complex scene.
Where do we even begin?
Well, we could start with Pope Pius II. His placement in the painting is curious, wouldn't you say?
Now that you mention it, he does seem a bit sidelined, doesn't he? Especially for a coronation.
Right. And it gets even more interesting when you learn that David actually tweaked the Pope's pose during the painting process.
Really? How so?
Initially, the Pope's hands were just resting in his lap, almost like, well, this is happening, I guess.
Sounds about right for someone in his position at the time, I guess. It couldn't have been an easy situation to navigate.
Exactly. But Napoleon, he wasn't a fan of that image of passivity. He wanted the Pope's blessing, or at least the appearance of it.
Ah, so he had David paint in the raised hands giving the blessing.
You got it. Just a subtle change, but it makes all the difference in terms of how the power dynamic is portrayed.
It's amazing how these small details can completely change the whole story a painting tells, isn't it? You know, speaking of power dynamics and stories, we were going to look at some figures who highlighted international tensions, right?
Right. And there's one figure in particular who stands out? Halit Efendi, the ambassador from the Ottoman Empire.
Oh yeah. What's the story there? I have to admit, I don't know much about the Ottoman Empire's role in all this.
Well, at the time, the Ottoman Empire was a major power, controlling key trade routes and a huge chunk of territory.
So Napoleon saw them as a potential threat.
Well, both a threat and an opportunity. Napoleon was all about expanding French influence, and the Ottoman Empire was kind of in his way. But also, imagine the possibilities if he could bring them under his control, right?
That tracks, yeah. Napoleon was nothing if not ambitious.
Exactly. So by including the Ottoman ambassador in this grand scene of Napoleon's coronation, it's almost like David is hinting at Napoleon's global aspirations.
I get it. It's not just about conquering Europe. It's about becoming a player on the world stage. Napoleon, the emperor of everything.
Exactly. And, you know, it's interesting because there's another figure, a bit more obscure, who also points to Napoleon's global ambitions, Bom Raphael de Monachis.
Oh, right. The Greek-Egyptian monk. He really stands out in that crowd, doesn't he? What's the significance there?
Well, on one hand, he's a symbol of Napoleon's Egyptian campaign.
Right. Napoleon was obsessed with Egypt, wasn't he? The history, the culture.
Yeah.
He saw it as this land of endless possibility.
He did. And Dom Raphael, as a scholar of the region, represented this link to that ancient knowledge and power.
So he's like a walking, talking souvenir from Napoleon's adventures in the East, a reminder of where he's been and where he might go next.
Exactly. But also, Dom Raphael represents something else that's crucial to understanding Napoleon's success, his pragmatism. Napoleon understood that knowledge, scholarship, these things were just as important as military might.
It's fascinating how each figure, even the seemingly insignificant ones, adds another layer to this whole intricate web of power and ambition. But it makes you wonder, where does Jacques-Louis David fit into all of this? He was the artist, the one actually creating this whole grand narrative. Was he just following orders, or did he have his own perspective on all of this?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's something historians still debate today.
So what are some of the thoughts? What side are you on?
Well, we know David was deeply involved in the French Revolution. He was a big believer in the ideals of the Republic. But then he ends up becoming Napoleon's official painter, the chronicler of his reign.
That's quite the shift from revolutionary to imperial portraitist. Did he genuinely buy into Napoleon's vision, or was he playing the game to protect himself?
It was probably a bit of both. David was a brilliant artist, yes, but he was also ambitious. He knew how to survive in a time of immense change. And those early days of the revolution, they were dangerous times.
I mean, it must have been a tough spot to be in. To believe in these ideals, but also to have to navigate the reality of a new regime.
For sure. And I think you can see that tension reflected in his work. There's grandeur there, a celebration of power, but there's also this underlying ambiguity, like he's grappling with something, you know?
I see what you mean. It's almost like he's inviting the viewer to question what they're seeing, to look beyond the surface. It's not just straightforward propaganda, is it?
Not at all.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so compelling, even today. We're drawn into this grand spectacle, but we're also left with these lingering questions.
Speaking of being drawn in, I have to wonder, how would people have reacted to this painting back then? I mean, this was before Instagram, before television. Seeing this massive canvas in person must have been quite an experience.
Oh, absolutely. The sheer scale of it, the detail, the vibrant colors, it would have been awe-inspiring. A true spectacle.
A powerful statement about Napoleon's rule.
Exactly. It was about creating an image, a narrative that would stick with people. And, you know, it worked. This painting, it became iconic, a symbol of Napoleon's reign.
Which is interesting because even though we recognize it as propaganda now, it still has this power over us, doesn't it? We're still drawn to it, fascinated by it. Why do you think that is?
I think it speaks to the enduring power of art, don't you? Even when we know the whole story, even when we can see the strings being pulled, we can still appreciate the artistry, the drama, the ambition of a work like this.
It reminds us that history isn't just facts and dates. It's about people, perspectives, stories. And sometimes those stories are messy and complicated.
Exactly. And it's up to us as viewers, as students of history, to engage with those complexities, to ask questions, to challenge our assumptions, to look beyond the frame.
Because there's always more to the story than meets the eye.
Absolutely. And that's what makes studying history, engaging with art, so rewarding. There's always something new to discover.
Well, I know I've learned a lot today. This deep dive has been fascinating. Thank you so much for guiding us through it.
My pleasure. Always a joy to talk about this stuff.
And to our listener, thank you for this excellent suggestion. We hope this deep dive gave you a new perspective on Jacques-Louis David's masterpiece and the fascinating time period it represents. Until next time, keep exploring and keep those deep dive suggestions coming.